Welcome to Les Bouches, Les Bébés.
Mental health.
That's what it's about today.
That's what it's all about today. I'm in a good mood today. I'm excited. I'm like, this is, I feel good. I feel good. And it feels good to say that and like take that in, you know?
Yeah. It's also great that we're just meeting with a therapist today, which is going to be awesome.
I feel like when I am about to have my weekly therapy session, I just have this overall feeling of like release and a breath of fresh air. And I'm really, really looking forward to bringing that on air with you guys. We have two incredible guest segments for this episode. Pow, pow, pow. Bonus.
Ow, ow.
Ooh, giving you two for one.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're going to be talking with a licensed clinical mental health counselor and certified emotional freedom techniques practitioner. And we're also going to be talking with our childhood BFF, doing
Kyra.
A little chat with Kyra.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I didn't have a lot of inner peace this morning, but then we ordered some sushi, and then since then, I've been feeling a lot more peaceful.
I feel like inner peace, like, as a visual concept, I have been envisioning the yin and yang sign, because I feel like, for me, a lot of inner peace comes from just balance. Like, not every day is going to be perfect, and I think taking that into consideration and just giving yourself the patience and grace to get through those days, and you're going to see the light at the end of the tunnel with that balance that life creates. What does inner peace mean to you?
Inner peace means no more internal judgment going on, and knowing that everything will pass and being present in the moment, I think.
I love that. And I think coming from me, like, one thing that I've really worked on in my own therapy is like my catastrophizing. That's one of the biggest cognitive distortions that I get caught up in. So finding balance is a source of inner peace for me, for sure.
Yeah. So what I've been working on mainly is being able to live my life alongside my anxiety in a healthy way, and not let it control me and the decisions I make. Ever since I turned like 19 or 20, anxiety has kind of been the number one issue I've been facing on and off. I forget how bad my anxiety is without the medication. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm totally fine. I don't need it. Like, I don't need medication. I'm like perfect the way I am. Like, all you gotta do is like blot or like tune it out and like, no, it shall pass. Like, you'll be totally fine. And then I'm off the medication for a couple months, and then I have another panic attack, start all over again from scratch, and then work my way through that. But I think with therapy, I've had a bunch of different therapists throughout my life, and some of them longer than others. And the main things I've worked on in therapy is whether I'm on or off the medication, how to live every day more in the moment. I definitely struggle with ADHD and anxiety, and because of, I think, the anxiety, some depressive episodes. So finding a balance where I can still give myself small exposures every day as practice, so I can build myself up and not become a fucking hermit. Because there have been times, and we've talked about this, where, like, you know, I work from home now. I don't have a lot of reasons during the week to leave my house and go do stuff other than walk my dog. And so sometimes it's easy for me to like stay in the small radius of like right around my apartment, and to the point where it's made me in some situations almost like agoraphobic, like being afraid of like being far away from home. Like, if my friends call me and they want to like go drive an hour away for the day on a day trip, that like gets my anxiety going a little bit. And to be able to work through that, sometimes like the subways have caused anxious episodes for me, sometimes flying has caused anxious episodes. But yeah, just being able to take care of myself, have daily exposures, making sure I'm eating right, sleeping right, meditating, and trying to stay present instead of, you know, ignoring the problem, which in my situation has made it worse in a lot of cases.
I feel like it's interesting because our anxiety, like, we relate to each other on a lot of things, but we also, like, have such different triggers.
Yeah.
It's actually crazy, like, when you really think about all the nuances of what anxiety and how anxiety resonates differently in so many different people. Because when you were talking about some of your triggers, like, you know, I've been there and we've worked through a lot of these things together. I think a lot of my triggers are career-based and also individual-based, like, about the perception of myself. Like, that is what really triggers my anxiety. And I think because me and my career are so parallel, they can get intertwined so easily, and it makes me question my self-worth. It makes me go down these kind of, you know, pigeonholes of panic and of feeling like a failure and of feeling like I'm not going anywhere. And it's been a very interesting obstacle for me. So I started therapy about a year ago now.
Congrats.
Thank you.
Cheers to that.
Cheers to that. Oh, wait, this is some ASMR. Here, cheers. But yeah, so I started therapy about a year ago. I had been encouraged to do so for a couple years. So it took me a couple years to, like, really, I guess, commit to myself and realize how much of a priority therapy should be in my life, or I wanted therapy to be in my life, I guess you could say. And so once I started therapy, I feel like it kind of opened Pandora's box, and things that I had suppressed for a long time started to come up and come out and really get to me. So I've had an interesting struggle, I guess, because for the first 27 years of my life, I would have pretty much denied that I had anxiety or anything of the sorts, because I was suppressing it for so long. And now I definitely feel that I have anxiety, which, like you, leads to depressive episodes, which has been, you know, one of the things that I've been battling and why I've been a little MIA on my socials for a while.
I think another thing, both of us never really talk about anymore because we're all trying to move forward from it. But with everything shifting during COVID, and it's still never fully going back to how it was before, that's created so many different types of triggers when it comes to mental health. You know, I used to go into the office every single day. I used to go use my weekends as my the only free time to get all my stuff done. And now my schedule is so different, and I know yours has changed a lot too, and how we don't even recognize it anymore since we're all just trying to, like, move forward. But that shift has really changed, I don't know, our mental health in a sense.
I definitely think this era that we're living in has affected our mental health collectively more than any of us could probably individually even say.
Yeah.
Because it's completely turned our world upside down in a lot of ways and made us reevaluate so many aspects of our life. And like you were saying, the things that we're doing on a daily basis, the experiences that we're having, we're kind of shaken up. And now we're just trying to figure it out. But
yeah, we're all just in it for the long run. But the sun comes up every day and the grass will always be growing. So I think that's what I try to remind myself when I'm trying to, you know, weather out an anxious episode. This is like a new thing. I've been traveling my entire life, but for some reason in the last 6 months, flying is now a huge panic trigger for me. And I call this bitch every single time I have to Uber to the airport on the way, when I'm going through security, when I'm waiting for my plane, and she is the best. She's always there for me, and I truly appreciate it so much.
I love you.
I love you.
I'm glad we create a comfortable space for each other.
Yeah.
I love that. Honestly, that really does help your mental health too, like having a community that understands, or people that understand in your life, a group of friends that understand. Because, like, if I was going through a lot of the stuff that I've mentally gone through over the last 2 years alone, without you, without Joe, like, I genuinely don't know what I would do without my community and my family, I guess you could say.
Well, we just want what's best for you, obviously. That's something that I've realized too, is that when I'm panicking or like a panic attack is building up, I'm more afraid of the episode going to happen than it actually happening, you know? So that makes it worse. So once I am anxious and then say it out loud to the people I'm with, it immediately starts to like dissolve more, you know? I don't know if you've experienced that.
Yeah.
But for me, well, it's like once I tell people like, sorry, I'm having a panic attack. And even if they react poorly, it at least doesn't feel, and no one has ever acted poorly. That's like, no one would do that except you to yourself in your own mind.
That's the thing. Yeah. We are our own bullies. I feel like so many people relate to that where it's like, you know, the perception that we have in our head, or like for me, a lot of times I am so judgmental on myself internally. And then I start to perceive those judgments in the people around me, which is just so toxic and so made up in my head. And like, you know, it creates this like spider web of a storyline that maybe it was based in reality, but a lot of it is now just emotional, which is definitely
Which is valid. Hard. You can have experience whatever emotion you want to experience. I think it's when we try to suppress it, which makes us dwell on it more and makes it become even bigger in our mind versus recognizing it's there and letting it go. You know, that's like the go-to phrase that they say in all the meditations.
Yeah.
But it truly is. Like, there's no better way to describe it.
Oh my gosh. I have to talk about this book that has truly changed my life. It is called Breaking the Habit of Being You by Dr. Joe Dispenza. And it is just, I can't get over how empowering it is. The entire idea is that your personality is not permanent, and through active, conscious techniques of thinking and changing the way your neural pathways work and the use of daily meditations, that you can truly change your personality, change your personal reality, and thus change your life. And a lot of it is rooted in quantum physics, and the idea that we don't have to live in a cause and effect reality, that we can actually create our own reality with the way that we are thinking about things. And one thing that Dr. Dispenza talks about in the book is how almost all of our thoughts that we have through the day, a lot of those are repeated. So I think we have over like 80,000 thoughts per day, like the average human. And more than half of those are negative, and the negative ones are the ones that really resonate. So the more you think negatively, it almost works as like an addictive situation within our literal neuro pathways, which is actually so insane to me. But it has really changed the way that I think. And I'm not going to sit here and say that like I don't have bad days, but I definitely can say that it's helped me along my journey to like heal from a lot of the things that I felt were permanent, that I felt like I've always wanted to overcome but didn't know how. It just shifted the way that I thought about myself and my life, which was so nice. Yeah, it's a cool book because it's like it's in three phases. So you have like phase one, which is the root of the science behind it, like the quantum physics aspects and how it relates to cognitive neuroscience. Then phase two is how you're going to apply it. Then phase three is the meditation, which it's a 4-week program. And that's when I was here in New York for a month during June this past summer. I am very grateful for my position to have been able to do this. And for the first time in my 7-year-long career, I took a 1-month sabbatical, which is what I'm calling it now. But at the time, I didn't really know it was called that. But in hindsight, I talked with my therapist about this, and she was like, it really was a sabbatical.
Yeah.
But I basically had the ability to come to New York, live with Rachel for a month, and take a little break from my day-to-day work. So it really gave me the opportunity to come to a city that I've always loved, experience the culture and art and honestly just the creativity that this city has to offer. And in conjunction with that, I was finishing off Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself, we started The Artist Way with Paulina. Yeah. And all of those combined, along with a couple other, you know, routines that I've gotten into, meditation, different self-care techniques that you've spoken about as well, that was the culmination of like my self-love experience. And I feel like I really started to fall in love with myself again because I was actually nourishing and healing my own soul instead of, you know, maybe just focusing on the anxiety or the stress in a different way.
Yeah.
That I would love it. We're gonna talk to a therapist.
Yes. If anything goes wrong, she can help us.
She's here.
She knows all.
She is incredible. Her name is Susan Schaefer. She is a licensed clinical mental health counselor in North Carolina, certified emotional freedom techniques practitioner, also known as tapping, 500-hour trained certified yoga teacher. Her clinical experience began 15 years ago working in various settings, including intensive in-home services, community mental health, and school-based treatment. Wow. And she actually bridges her knowledge, which I thought this was actually a really interesting point. She bridges her knowledge of psychotherapy and her passion for yoga to create group therapy modules for young clients and quarterly workshops for adults that focuses on emotional regulation and thought awareness through mindfulness, movement, and breath work. So she like combines all her passions like a true, you know, woman that she is.
Yes.
Combining it all, doing it all. We love that. And she has a solo private practice that provides counseling through a virtual platform while integrating psychotherapy, yoga, and tapping into her work to help all of her clients have a better understanding of life and to experience a more fulfilling life.
That's so cool. I'm really excited to learn more about tapping. Like, what is that?
I know, me too. I've heard a little bit. Like, I've briefly been introduced to it, so I have a general idea, but I really am interested to learn more about the ins and outs of it and, like, you know, how it really affects her clients and how it can help everyone.
Yeah, and how it relates to this theme of the day, inner peace.
Inner peace is liberating. We'd love to start off with what got you into the mental health space. And yeah, tell us your story.
Sure, thanks. Well, first of all, thank you for doing this podcast on mental health. I was super excited to get invited and to talk about this. I think it's a great way for everybody to just learn more about what's out there because we all have mental health. And I think it's a really important topic. So thanks for having me. I actually began my career as a public school teacher, and the lingo's changed a little bit over the years, but at the time I was a self-contained special education teacher. And I walked into that field thinking, this is it, I'm gonna be a teacher the rest of my life. And about 4 years into it, I realized that wasn't true for me. So I just took some time to dig into what I enjoyed about teaching, what kept bringing me back to the classroom. And what it was my relationship with my students. In the environment that we were in, it wasn't uncommon for our students to experience a lot of anger outbursts. So we were working with them on learning ways to modify their behaviors, to express their emotions. We helped them with de-escalating in those moments. And I found that that was really something that I wanted to continue to pursue and explore. So when it came time to make the decision to further my education, in the education world, it was either, you know, administration or go deeper into something in education, which I wasn't really feeling that, and counseling just really spoke to me. My former students are really what brought me down the path.
That's incredible. It sounds very full circle in your practice.
Yeah. Oh, totally. Yeah, it's because then, you know, years later, I worked into being a school-based therapist, and that was exactly what I said. Yes. I'm like, oh, this came around full circle.
I know also in your practice, you specialize in working with adults that have undergone traumatic events or experiences. Can you tell us a little bit more about how this trauma affects us as human beings long term?
So trauma can take on so many different roles. You know, sometimes we can experience in a single event that was traumatic. For those of us, we may have experienced some childhood trauma that we never really had an opportunity to work through, or that was never really quote unquote resolved. And so oftentimes when we experience traumatic situations, it can create limited beliefs within our system that, you know, keep us from what I want to say, like really living our life to the fullest capacity that we are destined to live. And so oftentimes we see individuals as they continue through life coping in ways that maybe aren't the most healthy, getting into patterns with either relationships, substance use. We also see other people very much thrive, but they're unresolved trauma maybe shows up in other areas of their life where maybe they're not experiencing a full inner peace within themselves, contentment, joy. So yeah, it's really a fascinating area to work in. I feel like the psychoeducation is really more and more focused on this because we definitely see this in our field.
We saw that you specialize in tapping as a technique, and we'd love to learn more about what that is and how it works.
Tapping is also known as emotional freedom techniques. So it is a form of self-applied acupressure. I integrate it in therapy with my clients as well as in a coaching practice. It's the techniques I know for me has been a game changer in my own life. Some of my clients use it as a tool for self-regulation. I have some clients where we actually use it as a way of processing and even working through trauma. So there's various techniques in EFT. What I appreciate most is that, much like yoga, there's a little form of tapping for everybody. For me, it's a tool that my clients can walk away with and learn how to use on their own, much like many of the techniques we use in therapy. But it really helps to regulate in the moment. It gives them a sense of empowerment because the effectiveness of it, they can really experience it within a few rounds to help regulate their system.
When was tapping brought into the scene? Is it a newer form of
therapy? It's been around actually for a couple of decades. It's really hitting more mainstream now. Cool. In the past, I would say 10 years or so, we're seeing more apps, TikToks. It's really becoming more popular.
And what does it look like?
So you may see different forms of tapping, by the way. But I'd be glad to show you the tapping points that I work with clients in session and demonstrate to you if you want to tap along.
Yes, I'm down. Let's gosh. This is so impromptu. I'm ready.
Yeah. Woo, tools. So the first tapping point is on the side of the hand. So this is typically where we start with clients, and you're just going to tap either hand. Sometimes they say your dominant hand, but I always tell clients whichever feels natural to you. And this is where we might address the emotion that the client is experiencing. We also take note of how intense the emotion is. So I would ask clients, well, 0 to 10, about how intense would you say this feels right now? And they rate what it is. And this way, it's a nice way to track to see. Mm-hmm. So if you're ever doing this on your own, it's always nice to ask yourself, how intense is this? Okay, it's about an 8. So we'll just demo where the points are. So this is the first point on the side of the hand. Then our next tapping point is at the top of the head. We'll go to the top of the eyebrows. So right above your eyebrows here. Yep. And I invite you to tune into the sensation, feeling the steady pressure. Our next tapping point, follow the brow line, and you're going to work your way just kind of like where your temples are if you were to rub if you had a little headache. Mm-hmm.
I was just going to ask, on a scale of 0 to 10, how hard should we be tapping?
So what we say, like a gentle pressure, enough to feel it, not cause pain. Mm-hmm. And then we'll go under the eyes. And then we'll use one hand, 2 or 3 fingers, under the nose. Excellent. We'll take this to the tip of the chin. I invite you to keep your eyes slightly open as you do this. And then our next tapping point, I'm going to describe in a little more detail. It's on the collarbone. So if you were to take your index finger, kind of where your collarbone is, place 4 fingers down, and then begin to move out to the side, you're going to feel where it gets just a little tender, and you're going to tap around that area. Excellent. And then our last tapping point is under the arms. So it's a little awkward. you could do, we'll demonstrate under one arm, and you're just going to go at the base. Oh, if you had a tank top on, maybe it's like right above your tank top strap, right at the base of your armpit. And some clients just do one arm, which is fine. Some do two, some like this, which is a little uncomfortable. Excellent. Yeah. And then you're invited to release that when you're ready. Maybe just notice any of the sensations.
Wow, I really did feel a release. Mm-hmm. That was amazing.
That was really cool.
Yeah, so if you,
I'm going to use that.
Yeah, if you were using this as a tool for your own self-care, at this point you might ask yourself, okay, 0 to 10, how intense is this right now? Did it go up, down? Sometimes it goes up. Continue tapping. We always try to work to a 3 or below to feel a little more regulated.
Oh my gosh.
I really like that technique because sometimes, at least I struggle with panic disorder. So mm-hmm. a lot of times when I'm having panic attacks and people tell me to slow down yeah. and take slow, deep breaths, it's so hard when my brain's like going crazy to go back to slow, but this is like you're still kind of doing something fast.
Yes.
So it's definitely a really cool, interesting technique to think
yeah.
about.
What a great tool. I definitely felt this release. Like after our little routine, I get this very rolly, chesty mm-hmm. feeling mm-hmm. that is like the physical interpretation of my anxiety, I would say. And mm. I feel it almost constantly, sometimes, of course, way more than others, but I really felt a release of that sensation, which was incredible. Mm. Thank
yeah.
you for sharing
the beauty
that.
Of what I'm hearing in your words, too, is that you're, the self-awareness that the two of you have with what you know, what you experience within your bodies, your kind of signs that you know that you're about to experience something intense. And mm-hmm. that self-awareness is really key. And so, yeah, bringing maybe this into your practice. And then we always just like to remind people that, you know, if you're doing this work and if you sometimes events come up or things come up that are a little more challenging to work through on your own, then that would be a great time to reach out to a professional for some support.
Yes. Over the years, especially with, you know, the pandemic and us mm-hmm. all trying to refine that sense of normalcy again, how do you feel mental health has changed in either your patients or what you've seen in your circle, if it's become more or less prominent in society?
You know, our mental health is our emotional being, it's our social well-being, it's how we relate to others, it's how we relate to ourselves, mm-hmm. And how we handle stress, how we interact with other people. And we also know that a person's mental health changes over time. Sometimes people may know that they struggle with a mental health disorder from an early age, or sometimes we experience these changes in life like we did with the pandemic, where it shifts a lot of how we're able to cope during a stressful moment. So what I appreciate is that there's so much psychoeducation out there, and I think that we're really moving away from the stigma that's attached to mental health. Mm-hmm. I think that's yeah. a bit of a, maybe for lack of better terms, blessing that's happened from the pandemic, mm-hmm. that we're having more conversations, we're seeing more therapists.
Yeah.
On social media, you know, creating TikToks and
yeah.
really putting information out there, and we're normalizing the fact that your mind health is just as important as any other physical health. For that, I feel like it's becoming more acceptable in society. Yeah. What I've seen in clients is much of what we mentioned a moment ago, some heightened anxiety now that we're adjusting back to the norm. There's a new change of getting back out into society and finding the comfort of what was once there, but maybe not quite the same as it was before. Yeah, yeah, and it was so different in different areas. You know,
yes.
like for where I am, I was in more of a, you know, metropolitan city where mm-hmm. we were still wearing masks 6-7 months ago, on and off. And where I had family and friends that were in areas and life was wide open again. I think that was another interesting piece to it, is that depending on where we were, you know, in our society, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. that kind of played a part into how everyone handled what they were dealing with, because our experience was different.
Yeah. Personally, I feel like because I'm so used to staying at home from the past couple years, leaving the house and doing things becomes so much more draining. And so I've been trying to do more exposure therapy, just in the sense of getting out of the house more often and mm-hmm. not needing to, you know, stop back at home or like come home and take a nap in between these periods.
Yeah.
To get back to normal.
Mm-hmm. I guess so. The theme of our episode is inner peace. So mm-hmm. what does inner peace mean to you?
I appreciate you asking that, because I think inner peace is different for everyone. I think, you know, for me, it's that sense of ease. It's that sense of calm. I feel like now more than ever, we need to give ourselves permission to make time to connect to those moments, and that it's different for everybody else. Me, I find it on my mat. I find it when I'm practicing, when I'm preaching to my clients. I find it in nature. I have clients that they find it when they are exercising their talents. If they're an artist, if they are musicians, that they find that when they're connecting to those parts of them that are creative.
I haven't thought about that, but I definitely think I fall into that category of creativity brings me mm-hmm. a sense of inner peace, as well mm-hmm. as balance. We talked about this a little earlier, but balance, like finding balance in my life and in my interests and in my career and in every aspect has really given me a sense of what inner peace feels like. And I love what you said about moment by moment, because that is so true. It is such a momentary thing, but can be really taken in when you allow yourself that moment to do so.
Yeah, I believe when we find that sense, we experience it within us, then it's something that we want to find again, but we need to allow ourselves permission to do so and to be patient in that process. Yeah, one of the things, like, you know, when I work with clients and we're first kind of connecting to what is peace to you, what does calm feel like, is really resourcing and identifying people, places, events in their life that they can vividly imagine or connect with that give them that sense of calm, peace. So that if there's moments, for example, me, I love going to the ocean, but can I just walk out my door and be on the beach? No. Can I sit and visualize and vividly imagine sitting in the sand, feeling the breeze, hearing the oceans, and allow myself to connect to it in that way? There's an exercise of practicing that.
It's incredible how deep the connection is between mind and our emotions. And in a sense, like, having that, the ability to visualize can bring something to life, can help allow you to experience that without being physically there, which is so mm-hmm. incredible.
Yeah. Our minds are amazing. They're just powerful. And when we, exactly what you said. It's really, our mind and body is connected and it works together. And I believe for a greater good when we learn the tools and techniques of how to regulate, of how to, like I said, give ourselves permission mm-hmm. and to also be curious about the parts of us that may experience these negative emotions or limited beliefs and to be curious about it with a sense of compassion and without judgment and criticism like we, many of us often do. Sometimes bringing in a sense of curiosity into that loop also, because there are theories that say these parts of us show up and may sound a little critical. And when we sit with those parts, or if we're curious about those parts, that sometimes those parts are actually there working for a greater good if we learn to befriend them and speak to them and see what's underneath some of that emotion or experience.
What do you have to say to our listeners that are struggling with self-doubt?
We hear a lot more in mainstream media about like imposter syndrome and feeling confident in the workplace and feeling like you're enough. And that those are all kind of stemming from those, you know, emotions related to self-doubt. I've noticed in my own life at times when self-doubt is really strong, it can almost paralyze and cause me to freeze and not mm-hmm. do anything. I think that that is something where when that shows up, again, to explore, you know, is our self-doubt coming from past mistakes? Is it coming from messages that we received in childhood that created this limited belief? Is it comparison? You know, we live in a society now where it's so easy to log into Instagram or see images of other people and start this comparison. And that can cause some lack of confidence and doubtful things. So, you know, what I would say, again, is to, you know, recognizing that doubt, can you give yourself permission to be curious about it, to explore that part of you, to befriend it? You know, is there a way to explore it with compassion and to understand, you know, why is this here? Is this something that is a repetitive pattern? Is this something that I'm experiencing just for this event and I can bring in some of these tools to work through it? Or is this something that is really stemming from something a little more embedded in my system that I might use a little, could use some help in doing?
Do you have any advice or programs that you think mm-hmm. might have helped some of your clients the most, or even you the most, when you're on this journey of achieving inner peace and helping your clients achieve inner peace?
I would say to be kind to yourself. Give yourself permission to envision what peace is for you at your life in this moment in time, because that can also shift during our lives. You're a living spirit in a human body having this experience, and
yeah.
you deserve to live life in with peace, with contentment, with you know, joy.
Well, thank you so much for coming on today. We yes. learned so much. I love the tapping part. That was really fun.
I know, it was so cool to have like get an experience with it too. Yeah. So thank you so much for sharing.
For sure. Yeah, if you ever have any questions or anything, you know how to reach me. So it was truly a pleasure. Thanks for your time today.
I've been waiting for this moment to intro you for a long time, Kyra. This
yeah.
is one of my favorite people in the entire universe.
Yes.
She is a Duke graduate, now studying at George Washington Law School and working at a huge law firm. I really wanted to have this conversation because we grew up together. I feel like we've had so many amazing moments of girl talk in like the 15, 20 years that we've known each other that I wanted to bring it on. And we wanted to introduce you to the Bush Babies and make you an official Bush Baby.
Oh, yeah, so officially yeah. a Bush Baby.
We're excited to hear your thoughts on mental health, on your spiritual healing journey, also on your experience and our experience in the conversation, talking about, you know, growing up in a multiracial home and our feelings of self-worth around that. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks for having
Thanks
me.
Thanks for coming on, Kyra. Cheers.
Cheers.
Just as a little bit of context, I guess, Kyra, Roxette, and I all grew up together ice skating. We all, interestingly enough, have an Asian mother and a white father. Mm-hmm. And at least Kyra and I, both of our moms came from and grew up in another country outside of America and moved here as adults.
Yeah, and I think like one thing that has been coming to mind recently is like it's something that my mom has always been very proud that she like talks to me kind of like a chameleon, and mm-hmm. she's like, you know, you don't, because I used to feel like, I know Roxette and I have talked about this, like mm-hmm. sometimes you feel like you don't fit in anywhere when you're like yeah. part of so many different backgrounds, and so my mom always saw that as something that was like something to be really proud of and something that was really unique. But then yeah. at the same time, like it comes up in my work now where I feel very grateful to like feel comfortable in the space I'm in, but then also part of that comfort comes from like suppressing half of
yeah.
that side of me. So
definitely.
It's like a weird thing to balance. And like you said, like we've all had our journeys, but like it is a journey, and
yeah.
I'm still kind of figuring that out.
For sure. I think we've talked about this before too, as far as like if someone were to make growing up a joke against, you know, Asian people, I would usually, in order to avoid conflict, would side with like, I would identify with my white side and be mm-hmm. like, haha, that's so funny. Or if people wanted to make jokes about white people, then I'd identify as yeah. my like person of color side in order to avoid conflict. And only now, as of more recently, I'm trying to actively undo some of that trained mm-hmm. Ability just so I can make sure I'm representing in a better way both sides.
Yeah, I definitely think it's like this weird internal struggle where you just want to fit in and you're just like trying your best, but it does create this separation internally where you're like, who am I?
Well, I also think because of that, like, it's something that I feel like I've harbored a lot of resentment growing up, feeling like I was put in this situation where I don't fit in anywhere. But now I feel like as I've gotten older, I've been able to like have more understanding maybe for like where my parents came from, and like it was it's very difficult to leave a country and not know anyone in a new place, not know the language, not know anything. And so I think a lot of it, even though it had maybe these like negative repercussions, like it was done with the intention of like making my life easier, which it has in a lot of respects, but it's again just something to like
totally
a journey
agree.
To like continue working through.
Isn't that interesting how perspective can change everything? Like, I feel like there was a time recently where all of a sudden my parents switched from like these, you know, I guess you could say like heroic figures in my life to like actually being real humans. And this only happened within the last couple years for me, where I'm like, oh, you had so many experiences that led you to react in the ways that you did. And I can see that that intent was coming from love and from a good place. And that changes everything.
I feel like I held both of my parents to such a high standard. And like exactly what you're saying, like I think kids idolize their parents, and it comes a certain age where you realize that you're an adult too and you understand what they're going through. But I feel like even just within the past few weeks, that's helped me a lot with dealing with, not to like get super like deep very quickly, but like when you're dealing with loss and like loss of parents is something like that I'm dealing with in my like mid-20s, it kind of almost like helped to have my parents not be on that pedestal anymore. And realize, because I used to panic and just be like, I don't know what I'm gonna do when I don't have my mom or I don't have my dad. And then within the past few weeks, and we were talking about this earlier, like with our newfound independence, like knowing that I'll be okay because at the end of the day, I have me. And so that's been comforting and
that's
a sad thing.
That's such a powerful like feeling though. Like that feeling of empowerment, of knowing your individuality and being, you know, just realizing that, I think is such a huge step in this journey.
Yeah. And knowing that like you are you because of what all of our parents have been able to sacrifice for us and teach us, and they have all set us up for success. I mean, like, all three of us are doing very well on our own in our lives. We're all lucky enough to, like, not necessarily need them for, you know, financial or support or other types of support, and it's all because of them, and they built us to be independent women, you know?
Yeah.
I do want to talk a bit more about how, when we were talking about like fitting in and stuff, because I remember back in undergrad for you, there was some either negative or like weird experiences that you faced, because for other contexts, Kyra is Jewish as well.
Yeah, I never felt out of place being Asian and Jewish. Like I was super involved with my temple, super involved with my youth group. I tutored people in Hebrew for their bar and bat mitzvahs. Like there was no one ever questioned me being Asian, and my mom had converted to Judaism. So, and she was very involved in her Torah study. So we were very involved in temple, and it's something that I wanted to be involved in when I went to undergrad. And I went to undergrad in the South. And so I just think that it's less common there. And it was like from the Jewish community, I got a lot of pushback of being like, well, if your mom converted, then are you really Jewish? Which had never, not that it was like everyone said that, but I had it enough that it, it made me not want to continue going to these spaces. And then similarly, I wanted to tap more into my Asian side and bond with other people that were Asian in undergrad, and it was, I was met with a lot of, well, like, if you're Jewish too, then are you really Asian? Like, I went to, my mom is from Thailand, and I went to an event with the Thai student organization, and I asked how I could get more involved, and they literally looked at me and said, like, oh, I'm so sorry, it's only for Thai students. Like,
what?
Yeah, which is,
like,
again,
they actually, like, fully said that.
Yeah, and I was like, oh,
so
like,
crazy.
Yeah, like, I am Thai, and they're like, oh, I'm so sorry, but, and, you know, it's that's one student out of an entire school, so, like, I don't want to say that everyone there thinks that way. I have many amazing Jewish and Asian friends from undergrad. But it's something that another part of that is I had friends from different backgrounds that felt the same way about their respective, like, communities, and I could see from an outsider's perspective, like, oh, if you had just kept showing up and been like, you know, kind of like resisted the backlash and been like, no, like this is my community, I'm here to say, then I think that they would have been accepted and I would have been too. But I don't think it should be on us to kind of like prove our spot.
Being your friend and watching you grow from your undergraduate experience to now being at GW, like you are literally a completely different person. So I want to hear a lot about like your own personal growth journey, what has helped, what hasn't helped, like how, like, because so many people face this feeling. And what has made you feel like the most empowered version of you? Because you are. Like, as a bystander, you really are the most empowered version of yourself.
It's been really inspiring to see your growth.
And it is, I'll reiterate, like, it is a journey. And I'm, like, by no means do I feel like, yes, I feel like I am one of, like, the best versions of myself, but that doesn't mean that, that like, it ends here. But I think at the end of the day, like, it really comes down to self-confidence, which I had none of. And maybe that, to tie it full circle, like that could be some of like how we were raised, and also we like grew up ice skating together, and that kind of, I think the world that we were in with ice skating was very like motivating by putting you down. When I went into law school, I knew I had these experiences in undergrad where I didn't fit in, and I just decided to go to those same spaces and just not be bothered when I got pushback, and was kind of like, no, I'm here and I'm here to stay. And like immediately within my first year of law school, got very involved with both the Jewish student organization and the Asian student organization, and had like leadership positions on both. And then no one questions it once you like take charge.
That's the craziest thing, is like once you decide that in your head, like that you can decide who you want to be every day of your life through the decisions you make, through how you handle situations, no one really knows who you are prior to that point. You know?
But that's and that's only because I'm coming from a place where I was not like that at all before. Like I was deeply, deeply insecure. And so because I've worked on it and like have been in therapy for years and just have taken time to like work on myself and put myself in uncomfortable situations, it's helped me a lot, even with like work and stuff. I used to be so anxious and so nervous whenever I started a new job or whenever I went into the office, and I just started this new internship for the summer, and I went in with so much more confidence because of all the other experiences I've had. And I feel like it's helped me a ton. And even it reminds me of, we did this really awesome lunch that was for the summer associates. So it's me and two other young women, and then all the women associates and women partners in the office that I'm at. And it was so inspiring to see people in like such a male dominated field that had become so successful, and they took a moment to pause and they were like, this is really for the three of you, like pointing at me and the other summer associates, and we're like, do you have any questions? And everyone, like, you could feel the nerves kind of in there, and I was like, yeah, I have a question, like, how are we gonna sit in a room with all of these influential people and like not take advantage of it? And that's something that I wouldn't do before, but having the confidence to like speak up was helpful.
Confidence really is everything. My mom actually told me recently, I was telling you, we had a very heart-to-heart conversation, and she told me that the one thing she always wished for in her life was confidence. And when I was growing up, I was literally the most, like, you know, you guys know, very insecure. Like, I mean, still am to this day. It's still something I'm working on. But I don't innately have confidence in myself. But hearing my mom have, like, a human response to that really helped me. So, I don't know. It's just interesting.
Also, having confidence is just a joke. Like, if you really fake it, like, to you make it...
Someone I was talking to was like, you truly, it was Chelsea, my manager. She was like, you truly faked it till you made it, and then you made it, and you were like, who am I?
No, I started doing that because I had this woman, she was a friend of a friend, she's kind of been mentoring me, she's another attorney, and she was telling me when she used to go into her firm, she would tell herself, like, I'm putting on my white man hat, and like she would walk into meetings with like big people and just be like, I'm gonna pretend that I have the confidence of a white guy. And I started doing that in law school, then it's just like you're kind of like acting and playing a part, and then you start to internalize it. And now I used to do, like, I don't know, things that I used to think were silly to kind of like raise my confidence, that now you just like actually believe, and it feels nice.
Well, do you think that was like the biggest shift for you when it came to growing confidence? What are the other things over time that you've noticed have changed for you?
Honestly, a lot of the growth that I feel like I've had has actually stemmed from issues I've had in like dating and relationships, because I think that I actually have had a lot of confidence when it came to like growing up with like my schoolwork, and I think I'm a great student, I think I'm a great daughter, and I think I'm a really great friend. But one place that I always felt like I was a different person and had no confidence in was dating. And so I would just like almost be a different person. But then as you go through so many experiences, I think that like the ups and downs and what I've had to learn from that has helped me the most. So that if I feel confident now in the space that I didn't before, then it just like helped everything else rise. And like truly knowing, it goes back to kind of saying that at the end of the day, you only have you, was like with dating, I realized, and this goes for friendships or anything, a job, anything else too, like if something walks out of your life, like it's truly no loss to you.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
You're right that like if you are able to do that in a situation where there's emotions and love and all these feelings involved, you should be able to do it or a little more comfortable doing it in non-love related situations, you know?
Yeah, and they always say like date as many people as possible to really figure yourself out, because I do think that there's something to that. Like the more you put yourself out there and see how you're reacting to other people's reactions in dating or in relationships or friendships or whatever, you start to figure out what is actually valuable to you, what you do prioritize and what you don't want to prioritize.
Yeah, and realizing like 99% of the time, like, it's just not about you. Everyone is going through something. And that was what helped me. So I was telling Rachel earlier today that this summer has been great for me because I moved to a city where I really didn't know anyone. And I did it for my job, and it was a really great opportunity for my career. Normally, I rely on having 20 people that I can call and be like, let's hang out. And so I didn't have anyone to do that. And I started like taking myself out to dinner. The first weekend I moved there, I went out to dinner and I ate in less than 10 minutes because I couldn't wait to get out and just go back to my apartment and be alone, because I was nervous about what people were thinking and who was looking at me. And then you just realize that no one is thinking about anything really but themselves most of the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And honestly, the one time I've ever eaten at a sit-down restaurant alone was when I was eating with my friend, but then he had to leave because he had to go somewhere last minute. Yeah, that's the only time I've ever eaten alone before. It was like the second half of the meal. But I ended up having a great time. I became like so close with the owner of the restaurant. We were slinging like free shots by the end of it. Yeah. And now he's great and I can like go there and hang out with him whenever I want, because all three of us are very social people. Mm-hmm. And so if we just remove our own mental boundaries that we've set up for ourselves that no one else has set up for us, we can really do so much more. And I think it's really
also
related to our podcast.
I was
going to
say
too,
part of it is like, I think I've done very well in school and in this beginning of my career because I feel like I can maintain a certain level of control, and I like like I'm a planner. I feel like a lot of law students are like pretty type A, but you realize when it comes to like interpersonal relationships, whether it's like romantic or with friends or family, there's so little you can actually control except like yourself or how you react to something.
Yes.
And so that like understanding that has helped me a lot. Like I have a friend from high school that lives here now, and when I was going through like a breakup of sorts and was really upset, I remember him telling, I was like, well, if I had just done this differently or this differently, maybe he would think differently of me.
Oh, no.
And no, right, of course. Like, that's, I would never think like that now, but he sent me this chapter of a book and it talked about it in a way that I really liked, where like everyone has their separate tasks and you are only really ever in control of your own tasks. So like, even if I had done everything quote unquote right, it's still his task, and I have no control over how he reacts to it. And so stuff like that has helped me a lot, even with work and things like that.
That's a really good way to think about things. And I think a lot of, you know, combating these, I guess, obstacles that we create with our emotions and thoughts and all that, a lot of it does come from changing the perspective or the way that you think about a certain thing, a certain insecurity, a certain situation that you've handled the same way all the time that you don't like the way you're handling it. And just reframing that in your mind is beyond helpful.
And I think that now that I think about it, the biggest next step for me will be to have enough confidence to trust in like my own judgment, especially when it comes to things like dating, because I know that's the one place where I maybe haven't made the best decisions in the past. And so
I would say that.
Okay. We've all been through our slew of bad decisions.
No, I mean, nothing crazy, but I think that like Roxette and I bonded over, like, we each had like a really toxic person in our lives that we kept around for like 3 years, yeah, basically.
Yeah.
That we never would have before. So things like that were.
And
I kind
at
of,
the same time.
So yeah, we were. And then really we kind of egged it on with each other.
Yes. But, yeah. Because we were just like continuously talking about
enabling each other.
Yeah, like definitely so enabling.
But what I was thinking was, because I know that I've kind of maybe not made the best choices, or I see the best in people that don't deserve it. Mm. I've relied a lot on my therapist and my close friends for their perspectives. But now that I feel like I'm at a different place in my life, the real test is like making my decisions based off of like what I believe and just like having confidence in that instead of like taking other people's words as like gospel. Because I had like a really good therapy session the other day, and it made me like really stop and think about something. But I was talking to a friend of mine who sees the same therapist, and she was like, what she does that's really great is she provides a new perspective and a new way of looking at things. But remember that, like, it's just that, like, don't take anyone's word as like Bible and, you know, stuff like that. So I think that will take time, but it's the next like big thing for me is to make my decisions based off of me and like find confidence in like that I did what was best for me.
I think being decisive comes back to confidence in yourself and
definitely
confidence in being able to stand by making a decision that's yours.
Yeah.
Like, even a couple weeks ago, I was debating on whether I should go to France or not. And I was back and forth.
Always, yes.
Calling. That's what part of me was saying. But then the other part was like, we have so much work for the podcast. And then also, it's just expensive. Like, I should probably just save money. But also, like, I don't want to be someone who, like, says no to, like, amazing opportunities. So it was, like, back and forth. I kept calling Roxette. I was like, why don't I have therapy right now? Like, I need my therapist to help me make these fucking decisions. But at the end of the day, like, I just needed to make either decision. And it doesn't really fucking matter either way.
Just
like,
make no one gives a shit.
I kept calling Roxette, and she's like, I literally, like, she was trying to be so nice about it because it's Roxette, but it's like, she clearly, like, could give less of a fuck because it's like, you're either going to France or you're staying in New York. Either way, like, I'm not going to see you. Like, can you stop fucking calling me, you know?
No, I obviously was there.
No, because you're a great friend, but it's like, let's be real. No one actually gives a shit about this decision except me.
No, I actually did the same thing with figuring out if I was going to stay home for longer or go to that wedding. And Roxette texted me. She's like, just follow your heart. And I'm like, that's so
powerful. I know. But also, it's like, but does it really, like, it but becomes that's what, such a big deal for you?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, in my head, I'm like, that's not helpful. But it is, because she's like, just do whatever you're going to do.
Yeah, like, we don't care. It's fine. Like, we'll still love you either way.
So something that, like, my dad, you guys know my dad, he's the sweetest being on planet Earth, I would say. And something he always said to me when I was growing up, which I feel exactly the same way as what you just said, where you're like, what? Like, how does this help me make this decision? What he would be like, I'd be like, should I have this or this? And he'd be like, whatever your heart desires. And I'd be like, Dad, like, which one should I get? But I do think that as an adult, I've found so much solace in following my intuition and really figuring out what that means to me. Mm-hmm. Because also, every person may think about that differently, but for me personally, it's like, I genuinely feel drawn to things. Now that I've opened up my intuition and started listening to it more, I feel like it gets stronger and stronger, and it really guides you in these decisions.
Yeah.
Like, naturally, I was the most indecisive person. Like, I would sit there and be like, should I film this YouTube video? I have 4 hours. And then I would think about it for 2 hours and
really
be like,
would. Now
I have 2 hours. Should I still film it? Should I not? Like, should I just go to sleep? Should I read? And it was just this, like, constant just chaos in my head. So for me, like, following my intuition or following my heart or whatever you want to call it has, like, genuinely kind of changed the way that I can go about these decisions that really guide us in our lives.
When I get anxious about things, I'm very quick to use money being like, oh, but, like, with anything that I'm, like, kind of scared of doing because of my anxiety, I'll use money as a reason, like, not to. And, like, that I literally work and sit at staring at a computer every single day. I've given up years of my life instead of, like, I don't know, traveling, like, doing whatever the fuck I want to do. Every single morning, I choose to sit in front of a computer so I can spend the money that I make from it. So why am I always using this as an excuse? It's also just because, like, yo girl gets panic attacks for sure.
Yeah.
Well, I heard this, like, really interesting thing on TikTok which just kind of made me think about money in a different light, which was that it is a exchange of energy, and it started off as a trade, right? Like, you use money to buy
barley off the ships or whatever it was. Barley. First thing that popped into my head. And now it's gotten to a point where money is this huge stress factor, which I obviously totally understand. But at the same time, if you can shift it to like this exchange of energy, I think it feels different when you are spending money on things that are actually bringing value into your life, because then it makes it worth it. And I'm so happy you came on the train, even though it was, you know, a little more expensive, because this conversation and this energy that we are spreading around right now is important to me and something that I cherish and something I hope you cherish.
Thank you so much for watching. You can find us on TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube at Bush Babies World, as well as our personal accounts at Roxetarisa and at Rachel Traw. And make sure to join our Discord to be an official part of the BB community. Make sure to stay up to date with everything we have going on at www.bushbabiesworld.com.